How are we gonna restore 15 to 20 million
jobs? I am your
you
future.
Have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio. However, people from across the USA can tune in simply by logging on to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Also, when you go to that site, you will see a new link for American Workers Radio, and that is done by the free download of Buy American app by Gofore Made in America. I'd like to compliment Mike Sessions for a beautiful, beautiful effort to get more and more people involved in buying American made. Kindly click on that, download that. You put it on your phone, computer, or wherever you want. Also, when you go to that site, you will see our 2019 theme, Working Together for the Best Interests of America and American Workers. Also, later today, you will receive an email of today's broadcast, and I ask that you send it out to family members and friends, because this is where we get a lot of new people. I'd also like to thank the 21 radio broadcasters across the USA that continue to use my weekly commentary from the Saturday show to put on during their public service time. This is also helping us to unite people in a very positive way. That's what we're all about, a positive change in the USA. Well, as you know, last week, I spoke to some very distinguished people, and I'm very pleased to say that they are once again with us, and they include Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, a national small business advocate, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and also Curtis Ellis, who is part of the American First Project, helping President Trump and helping us to make sure that people know the good things that are happening here in the USA. I compliment Curtis as well for his many emails and the publications that he puts out, and also the programs that he appears on, including ours. Also, compliments to our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, always happy to be with you. Well, last week, we started off the program by talking about liberty. Yep, that was a very good thing. And people said, boy, if anything we have in America, it is liberty. Well, today I want to take a little bit of time, in addition to the many other things happening in the news and around us, I'd like to take a little bit of time to talk about education. It's another way for a person to enjoy liberty as they're able to support themselves with a job, a skill. It makes liberty more alive in their life as they're able to support themselves and their families. I'm bringing this up today because during the month of March, school boards across America are meeting to finalize the programs that they'll be offering in September 2019 during their school year, and also priorities that they will continue to focus on and look more deeply into during the September 2020 school year. Now, as I talk to people, everybody is concerned about education. 25, 30 years ago, people had civics, they had geography, they had all these things. We didn't have so many types of computers. We didn't have any type of cell phones in the system. I think we have to go back a step or two and ensure that America students are taught civics, teach them what it is to be an American, what it is to be free, how important history is, and how important a job skill is that will help them earn a living and be respected for life. That's really lacking in our schools right now, and I would like to open the conversation with someone who is going to have a few kids in school in the future. Rich Logis, what do you think about the school system of 25 years ago and where we are today?
Well, I mean, good morning, Michael. Good morning to listeners. Hope everybody's doing great out there. You know, Michael, I'll open and preface with, and strike me down if I'm lying, because I've got video proof to show everyone. But when I came downstairs a few days ago, my two-year-old had built a little wall around her play area. So at 2 years old, and I asked her, I asked my wife, did you do that? And she said, no. Then my wife asked me, did you tell her to build that wall? I said, no, I didn't tell her to do anything. So at 2 years old, Michael, my daughter understands the natural order that borders and walls work at two. She knows this at 2 years old because the natural order is to have protection. Not because you hate the people on the outside, it's to protect your... So my kid wanted to protect her toys. She built a wall around them, Larkin. Can you imagine that?
Well, that means she has a very involved parent. Now, I hope that she's sitting there with you once in a while and listening to some of the shows that you listen to and the shows that you are doing. And I'm sure that she got the idea, the importance of the wall. As you know, I'm a big supporter of the wall. And I will say this, that because of all the restrictions that have been placed upon teachers and superintendents in the school districts, I believe we've put up walls ourselves between students and teachers, between teachers and school boards. I'm going to say this to you as we continue our conversation. A great school superintendent from the next county outside of Philadelphia said to me, Michael, I encourage you to urge people to call their superintendent's office, to call their school principal, and let them know the importance of getting all of these programs back into the schools, especially the junior high and the high schools. Many of the schools keep telling everybody, oh, it would be too costly to institute this program and that program. I ask students, do you have entrepreneurial classes? And they look at me and they say, I don't even know what it is. And I said, it's business classes. Do you have any kind of business classes? Do they show you how to do a checkbook, how to, you know, make a plan? No, that's not it. We're mainly focused on other things. How are we going to learn things through the computer, through our cell phone? I said, how about times tables and stuff? I asked the younger kids, do they do the times table? No, very few these days are doing the things that really make your mind think without without an electronic device in your hand. So this is, in effect, building a wall against students, Michael, and teachers.
Michael, if I looked at education in the last 25 to 30 years, and I am not indicting all school districts, all administrators, and all teachers. I am not, because there are many fine, I do believe there are many fine teachers and those in education, okay, who want to educate kids, actual education. So if I took an actual graph, you know, what do they call that? The inverse pie chart, whatever these fancy
right.
things are
Absolutely.
Called, right? And if you took the last 30 years and you took two lines, one line is education, the other line is indoctrination. Here's what you'll find. You'll find that at one point, the education line was higher above the indoctrination, which means there was more education than indoctrination. As time went on, however, the indoctrination line steadily crept upward, while the education line steadily crept downward. So today, what we have done is we have produced a new generation of young people who are environmental activists, gun policy activists. I just did on my show, Michael, last week, that incident where a bunch of school kids showed up to California Senator Dianne Feinstein's office to talk about environmentalism. These are 12, 13, 16-year-old kids. So what we've done is we've made them into little Redcoat Hitler Youth, creepy kid activists. That's what we've done, Mike.
Yes, but you know, you bring up another point. This
That's
is also
education.
Something that has to be resolved, and that better happen soon. And that is teachers going into the classroom, pushing their point of view on students. That should be really unnecessary. They should have their curriculum, follow that, and not try to indoctrinate people into their point of view. That really has hurt more than it's helped, because students freeze. If they have an opposite opinion, they freeze knowing that the teacher has another way of thinking. Curtis, you are involved with the Jobs Alliance. Have you seen progress up or down in the way our students are prepared for the new job economy?
Well, what I see is that there is now a heightened awareness of the need for skilled trades education. And thanks to President Trump and the people around him, including Ivanka Trump, who's made workforce development her key signature issue, there's starting to be a recognition and awareness that not everybody's going to be a doctor or a lawyer, or should be, that working with your hands, working in manufacturing, working in making things is a worthy pursuit. For too long, we have really been prejudiced against having our kids or anyone go into something that wasn't a four-year college degree or even a postgraduate degree. And it's beginning where we're starting to reverse that trend. Unfortunately, there's still a long way to go. The elites in media and in government and elsewhere still seem to look down their nose at people who work with their hands. I've just started reading this book, fascinating book. It's called The Land Was Everything, Letters from an American Farmer. And the farmer is a fellow by the name of Victor Davis Hanson. Viewers of Fox may be aware of him. Victor Davis Hanson is a classical Greek scholar. He teaches at University of California, and he lives on the farm that his family homesteaded in the San Joaquin Valley of California five generations ago, going back to the 1800s when Americans settled in California. He's lived on this farm raising grapes, raisins, things like that, not row crops, but specialty crops. And what he's talking about in this book is the importance, or the unique contribution and the unique perspective that farmers have, and how our democracy and our Western civilization is really rooted, no pun intended, rooted in this perspective that comes from the agrarian life. And I'm starting to feel that I see a corollary in those who work making things rather than simply being lawyers or making ideas or making arguments on paper, but actually producing something with their hands gives you a different perspective and gives you a different way of viewing the world, a sense of accomplishment, and you're wrestling with physical reality and bending it to your will. And that gives you a different way of seeing the world than this antiseptic, non-active intellectual discourse, which we have unfortunately come to prioritize and has come to prominence in our way of thinking lately. We're all the poorer for it. So I'm starting to see I'd like to believe that I'm starting to see a correction, a course correction, that we've been on the wrong path. There is still a long way to go, which Mark can speak to. I want to say something. That was a great story about Rich's two-year-old building the wall. It brought back memories. And, I remember as a kid making a fort, right? Making forts, whether it's in the snow or whether it's draping a blanket over chairs to make a fort in your house, in playing around in the living room. This is it speaks to humans' territorial nature. It is in our nature. Mammalians, mammals are territorial. Whether it's a lion or a dog or raccoons or human beings, we are by nature territorial and on a deep genetic level. And so this whole open borders, globalism, global perspective is anti-human. It's unnatural. And it is only through the tyranny of an all-powerful government that such a worldview could be imposed on people, because it does not spring naturally from the human soul. And I hadn't even thought of that until I heard a little story about Rich's two-year-old building a wall. This is something that comes from us. Doesn't mean we have to hate everybody on the other side of the wall, but to try to make people not build walls, build fences, build borders, and understand boundaries, it's like saying there is no such thing as biological sex and that there's no difference between masculine and feminine. It's just unnatural. Some idea cooked up in some postgraduate seminar that has no connection to reality.
And you know, Curtis, it's natural for people wanting to protect themselves. It's something, you know, I don't understand why it wasn't done many, many years ago when they first saw the abuse happening, when they saw the people coming, when they saw all of our programs being, you know, swollen by illegals coming in and crime rising and, you know, having to accept these people and place them into various communities throughout the states. People who are part of the American dream for years don't like the idea there of them saying we're all of a sudden going to relocate 500 or 600 illegals in your community. Those children will have to go to your schools. We will have to provide ESL classes for them. I believe you have to come in through the right port of entry. And I think as we're talking about education today, that's a bad example for any teacher to go out of their way to talk about we shouldn't protect ourselves and this and that. We go outside and on a cold day, we protect ourselves by putting on a coat. It's simple. It's very simple. You have to look at it as basics. This is a very historic time in America. It's true. More and more of the schools want to get back into the programs where they're going to be able to graduate students that are ready for the workplace. Right now, we're not doing that. We have, in fact, the largest amount of people in debt, young people in debt for college educations that give them a great piece of paper, but give them no job in the end. And all this has to be directed to the right people, and no more excuses. We have to sit down and direct education dollars to trades of every type. Let the student be able to decide. We talked about it on a few times, even virtual classrooms where students could have 3-4 months of doing something in a computerized classroom to see if that is something they want to do for life or a long time, or do they want to do something else. They would have some opportunities to learn about it through a virtual classroom. That has not been happening enough. It's a few programs here and there. And with that, I'm going to turn to Mark. Mark, you've been in this for so long. trying to get people to get to your welding shop. You've been hearing about it from other businesses in your area. What do you recommend for the superintendents and the school boards to do this year and next year to get this thing moving again?
Yeah, you know, Mike, welcome, and Curtis and Rich, and I'm not sure if Larkin's with us, but I don't know if, Mike, if you got a chance to read the event I was part of last week. It was awesome. And in answer to your question, I think we need to do more of this. So, you know, what it is Dream It, Do It. Evelyn Sabina runs the project coordinator for Dream It, Do It in this area. And across the country, she was licensed with the American-Made Movie, so she's been doing this for 5 years. They brought a bunch of teachers, I think almost 20. They had visited, it was a professional development training seminar. They came to my store probably on a bus about a year or two ago, and I had happened to tell my story, which we call the bus story. Well, she tied it in, and the movie they were using, of course, I'm in. And she had this event last Thursday at Olean Schools, which, Curtis, you might even know, but Olean's down by the border of PA in New York, and it's Allegheny County, Olean. The area is great. It was basically manufacturers and educators. We presented it to juniors and seniors, but there was 500-plus juniors and seniors in attendance. The president of Jamestown Community College, which is based out of Jamestown and out of Olean. They have two campuses. So they showed the movie, Mike, and it was the 60-minute version. All the students were there, and then after the movie, I walked out, and we had a great time. These kids' eyes were open. They wanted to know about entrepreneurship. They wanted to know about manufacturing. You know, at one point, the principal asked the students, what if we take Dresser Rand, if we take Cutco, if we take Zipco out of this area, what happens? And one student yelled, no more Olean. You know, our town's gone. Because that's what happens. Even in the movie, I didn't realize that the forest that they were taking and making the Louisville Slugger was from Ellicottville and PA border, the forest. So everything tied in. To do this, and I really felt after it, Mike, that that's where I want to be with juniors and seniors. I was, you know, I had jeans, steel-toe boots, and a polo shirt on, but I related with them well. Their questions were outstanding. They wanted to know about entrepreneurship. They wanted to know why manufacturing matters. We had a gentleman that was manufacturing bearings that came and also spoke to the kids beforehand, and he makes bearings for the spaceships, rockets, and top-quality precision bearings. He happened to start out of his garage, too, back in the 80s. So it was great, Mike. We need to do more of this, more educating the students on, just like Curtis said, there's a stigma on the skilled trades or career tech education or working with your hands, which could be robotics, could be welding, could be machining, could be trucking. There's so much CAD drawing, engineering. There's so much to it, but we got to, the parents, and parents have to change. We have to have more of these meetings where the Mark Andles, the business owners, the people come and tell them what you can actually do besides, you know, get your two-year degree, never down college, go to the trade schools, but there's so much you can do with your hands and kind of enjoy it. Making things is cool, but, Mike, with the movie, with the presentation, with my getting 20 minutes to a half hour and having a question-answer period with these kids that are off, they're our future. It was exciting, and it was, I feel, rewarding. And the one principal and the one doctor of the JCC, there were six students that didn't want to participate, said, you can't mandate me to watch a movie and be here. Well, they made him do it. And afterward, them were the six that came down and asked me one of the most of the top questions. So that, I was told, made their day. That, you know, I made change in these kids' lives. So very, very interesting.
Very good, Mark. That's a wonderful report, and I'm really pleased to hear that. That's exactly what a few...
I think we need more of that.
Yes, that's what some of the school principals are telling me, to push the education. You know, we're watching the national news media, and when I say I really agree now that these are witch hunts that are going nowhere, why can't they devote 50% of their time in Congress to fix the broken system, the school system, the education system in America, to get the business people to speak up and say, we need this type of person for our future needs, and give a timeline, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Let's know what the hell is going on. Right now, you have business people that are calling the trade schools. The trade schools have probably 10 businesses calling for every graduate that's coming out of school this May or June. That's unbelievable. Now, if it was reversed, if they were calling and they had 10 people to pick from, then we could say the school districts are doing their job. But one person will be available because there is very few boys and girls in the trade schools. There was a report on 60 Minutes this past Sunday, and it talked about how they need computer technology teachers very, very badly. And it said that there's very few people in the USA promoting change in America's schools. And this school system in New York is really going out of its way to get people into the computer technology programs to teach young people about what could be their possibility in the future. Just sitting in a classroom talking about some current events or whatever is the desire of the teacher is not the way it should be. They should have a better curriculum, and also no teacher should be able to push their point of view on young minds sitting in the seats. Larkin, I know you have a point to make on this.
Good morning, Michael, and good morning to all of the panel members, to Henry, who was so kindly about to send Jacksonville a quarterback, and to our listeners. I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, I'm going to push a little bit off on one of the points that you just made, Michael. It seems to me that our Congress right now, the House of Representatives, is spending an inordinate amount of taxpayer money and their time investigating a president when there's already, Mueller's investigation going on. He's about to break with that. If Mueller finds nothing, Congress is still going to continue to press. And if you combine what the Democrats in the House of Representatives are concentrating on right now, like this is the biggest problem that the United States of America has, and one of the things that they do that I think is the largest problem that they produce is this this wealth and success shaming that they're taking this country through. It really is so sad. The ugly, awful things that they have to say about people who have accumulated any sense of wealth or have been successful at what they've done. Even if you started from scratch, they don't care. If you're wealthy, you're the bad guy right now. This is why I'm glad to see AOC and the young lady from Minnesota in the House. We need to get this stuff out in the open, and we need to vote it or scream it or whatever away. We need to get it out of our system. I'd be very surprised if we started to lean towards socialism. The thought frightens me, but I believe that by the time AOC and the rep from Minnesota, whose name escapes me, by the time they get all of this stuff, Kamala Harris, by the time they get all this stuff out on the table and everybody gets a chance to look at it, the American public's not going to buy it. And I think the American public's getting a little tired and asking them to stop this wealth and success shaming. It's just ugly.
I agree, Larkin. I think
Michael, may I?
Absolutely.
Because I know Curtis is going to want to get in on this. So I'm actually writing a brand new piece. It's going to come out this week, and I'm going to dedicate it to Henry, who's a swing voter, who's thinking about voting for Bernie Sanders. We need his vote for 2020, because you guys are in a purple state in Pennsylvania. So the article, Larkin, is entitled "Socialists Aren't Actually Very Socialist." Socialists don't believe
the BS that they peddle. Does everyone know that? They love money and guns and walls and fossil fuels and meat and Amazon and paying as low taxes as much as anyone else. Socialists don't believe, they don't actually believe in what they peddle. They just want it, Larkin, because that's how in any country or society in the history of the world, whether it was primitive, whether it was in the Middle East, whether it was in Eastern Europe, whether it's in South America, these isms, communism, socialism, etc., this is how the masses are kept under rule, under the rule of tyranny. So Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, the one you're talking about, the one we now have, we've changed our rules in the House so people can wear headgear, because wearing headgear was not allowed for over 100 some odd years. So we changed that so she can wear the hijab now. Ilhan Omar is who you're talking about. These people, Bernard Sanders, they don't actually believe in socialism. Does everyone know that? Like, I've been listening, Curtis, to the same bull blank for two decades with Democrats telling me, well, I know if Hillary Clinton's elected, I'm going to pay more in tax. No, you're not. No, you're not. Larkin, how long have you been listening to Democrats say they would pay more in tax? Do you guys know anyone who's ever written a bigger check to the Treasury?
No.
Can you name me one person in your life who's written a larger check to the Treasury or to their state government? Yesterday on my show, Michael, I talked about how New York State right now has a $2.5 billion budget shortfall. New York City has 118 billionaires in it, Curtis. How come they don't buck up? Redistribution of wealth, but not my money, right? Higher taxes, but not my money, right? Socialists don't believe in the crap that they peddle, Michael. But why is it sexy? Why does it sell? Because of two points, one of which you talked about at the onset. Part of it is education, and the other part of it is that when it's all about indoctrination and it's not about education and you got a low-thinking population, this stuff sells, and it's sexy because it requires no thought. And there are millions of Americans who are going to vote for that. Whatever Democrat is the nominee in 2020, whichever one, is going to peddle this garbage, and none of them actually believe it. But it's what their market wants, Michael. Politics is a business like any other. It's about selling. You have to sell what your market wants. The market in the Democrat voter base isn't interested in free markets and the wall and judges who are originalist, textualist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're not interested in following the rule of law. So what they're interested in, for example, with the president's tax returns, whether you think he should reveal them or not, it's fine. If you think he should, that's fine. You don't have to. Everyone else has done it. I get that. So what the Dems have done, Larkin, is they've created an investigation around a non-existent legal statute, namely that you have to show tax returns. There is nothing that I can think of more unconstitutional than that.
I agree.
The Democrats have destroyed amendment after amendment in the Bill of Rights, elsewhere in amendment. They destroyed the peaceful transfer of power. They're destroying the freedom of speech and freedom of religion, the Second Amendment, due process, equal protection, a right to a trial by an impartial jury. They're shredding this thing, Curtis.
Yeah.
So why is it so sexy? Why does it sell? Why is it so? Why do people listen to millionaires, Democrat millionaires, who tout higher taxes and redistribution of wealth, and they buy it up like a damn cult? Why? Because of one of the points you brought up, Michael. Because of indoctrination, not education.
You're right, Rich, and I have to say,
there's other reasons, but that's a big one.
You know, most of the people.
If I could just add, Michael, very quickly, something that I wasn't even going to bother to tell a story, and I'll tell it very quickly. I was in an environment in a daycare center. I had my grandchildren since last Thursday, gave them back to their parents last night who returned from San Diego. And I was speaking to a group of kids in the playground waiting for my granddaughters. I was speaking to I asked the teacher, and she said she thought he was five. And this kid asked me, are you Donald Trumpet? And I kind of giggled a little, and I said, no, I'm not Donald Trumpet. No, I'm not. And so we talked a little bit. I said, he's the president, like George Washington. He's president of the country. And this kid said, yes. And this is virtually a quote out of a five-year-old's mouth. Donald Trumpet is supposed to be in jail, but instead he's our president.
Harkin, wait, hold on. You mean to tell me not all five-year-olds you know say that?
Nah, that's the first five-year-old.
No, I thought all five-year-olds say that. Like, Curtis, I thought all 16-year-olds in America were gun control activists. That. I thought all 16-year-olds know exactly what James Madison wrote when he wrote the Second Amendment, and then say things like, why do you take money from child murderers? This is what kids in Parkland said. 16, Michael. 15, 16. The kids who showed up to Feinstein's office, 13, 14 years old, talking about environmentalism. Do you guys understand that these people will they have destroyed the youth of this? I'm sorry, I don't mean to exaggerate about it. I'm not saying that all on the Dem side are bad. I'm not saying that because we got plenty of morons on our side also. But damn it, does everyone understand the youth is always the first group preyed upon?
Yeah.
They are. That's Ted Waring said. If someone asked you, what's Ted Waring said your child is becoming a Democrat about? You know what I told him? Make sure your kids don't grow up to be Democrats because there'll be two or three more I got to outnumber in 14 years at the polls. Yeah, so he said. Yeah.
Well, this is exactly what, you know, a lot of the people in Washington are strictly publicity hounds. They will say anything and do anything to get publicity. In many cases, that's the only way they would get publicity because they don't have any real programs that are helping America. Where I blame Democrats, Republicans, and independents equally is none of them have addressed the real bread and butter issues of America in the last 30 years. As businesses left this country, what elected person can any of us point to that made a big stink about it in the 80s, 90s, or the beginning in 2000? Very few. I mean, Curtis, we're doing it here. When people see me, they say, wow, I can't believe you guys stuck around. It's unbelievable. There's nobody in Washington. And you get these people who are just willing to say anything to get publicity. They get it, and the CNNs and the Foxes and everybody else in the major media covers this over and over, and they're indoctrinating people. It's to the point now that parents and grandparents are frightened to get involved with the schools so that they're not harassed in return. They don't want to give too many opinions. Some people tell me I'm afraid to speak up.
Michael, that sounds like the Soviet Union.
It is just like it. They say, I don't want to get...
All the polls, you know, the old timers who lived under that crap, like my wife's family, I told you last week I had the ration ticket, afraid to speak up. What is this? Iran?
Right.
If you want to take the village, move to the Islamic Republic of Iran. Excuse me.
Wait a minute. What are we doing to our children and their future and their future? I mean, we are watching a generation of young people be just pushed aside. They really have no leader that has said, oh, no, if you want to go up the ladder of success, this is what you do. The businesses are calling around asking for people to be sent to their place for interviews because they need workers. How is that even possible in this country? And if they can't get them from our country, then they go to other countries that are teaching every day in foreign countries. Their focus is mainly on teaching their children the new technologies of the world so that they are able to fill any job at any time. Yes.
Well, we have the teaching the new technologies. We need to be teaching the basic skills. We need to get back to reading, writing, and arithmetic in that order or in any order. by reading, I don't mean reading Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. I mean how to read and to understand that there is interpretation laid on everything. And I was surprised when I worked at CNN, this is more than 10 years ago, we would get these college interns in, people who had degrees, communication degrees, and they could not write a sentence. They could not write a grammatically correct sentence. One of the producers, one of the senior producers on the Lou Dobbs show, and this is someone who had worked at CNN for years, did not know that the entire House of Representatives is up for election every 2 years. These are some basic facts that, and basic skills and basic understandings that are not taught in school anymore. And when I say teaching reading and writing and arithmetic, as you said, being able to do sums and do multiplication without relying on an electronic device. This is very, I think it's very important. Maybe I'm old-fashioned. With reading, what we need are critical thinking skills, not indoctrination, but how to make an argument, how to do deductive reasoning, and how to critically analyze any statement that's given to you. There's that old saying, there's two sides to every story. There's the revision, there's at least two sides to every story. I'd say there's two sides to every story, but not the two you're thinking of. So for every argument, there's a counter-argument, there's another way of look at it, and we have to give our not just our kids, our population, the ability to understand that and to respect that. Because what we're being faced with now is this basically totalitarian thought process that there is a right way to think about everything. And if you don't share that opinion, shut up. As you were saying, parents are afraid to speak out and get involved in their school system because if you express the wrong opinion, you will be ostracized. Frightening story I read the other day that now even in the hard sciences, in the engineering schools and the hard research science schools, there is now this, the gender and race crowd is moving in, that they're now teaching, instead of teaching people the laws of thermodynamics, they're now saying, well, the laws of thermodynamics are biased against women and non-white people. And so we have to. So they're teaching engineers how to be sensitive to the needs of non-white people. Excuse me. The laws of thermodynamics apply equally to everybody. And that's all you need to be learning in engineering school, as far as I'm concerned. It's infecting everything. This is what in the Soviet Union was known as Lysenkoism. And Lysenko was this geneticist, and he seemed to have this theory that right ideas could be propagated through genes. And this infected the entire study of genetics and even plants, breeding plants and whatnot. Of course, it was crackpot, but it was politically correct. So that's what they taught. And I'm afraid we're drifting in that direction, more than drifting. We're steering wholesale in that direction in this country. It's just unbelievable.
What you were saying about the
investigations, I think you're exactly right. Look, people don't just have the impression that politicians are more interested in preserving their own power than doing the job they were elected to do. That is the truth. Politicians are. The Washington politicians are more preoccupied with protecting their own position, furthering their own power and prestige, and cementing their hold on power than they are in doing the public's business. And these investigations, is the clearest example of that, and I don't think that lesson or message is lost on the public, and it's all going to backfire very badly on the Democrats because people are sick of it.
Yeah,
I was working for MSNBC in 1998. At that time, it was before it turned into the overtly wholesale branch of the DNC that it is today. And I was screening calls for John Gibson's show in the afternoon. And this was during the impeachment. And I would hear caller after caller who wanted to go on the air and talk to the host saying, I'm a lifelong Republican, but I am sick of what the Republicans are doing with this impeachment and this investigation. They need to get back to doing what they were elected to do. I'm sick of this, and I am not voting for the Republicans in the upcoming election. And I heard it with my own ears, and this was before everybody got sophisticated and become trolls and concerned trolls and lie about who they were in order to run false flags up the poll and trick everybody. These were sincere people. And it was an eye-opener to me, and I'll never forget that. And I believe that that little bit of history is being repeated right now. And remember, most people are, to answer a question that Rich brought up, most people have their party affiliation. It's a matter of emotional loyalty. It's tribal identity. My parents were Democrats, therefore I'm a Democrat. And once you make that decision, then everything else falls in line behind it. No matter what the Democrats do, it's got to be right because my parents are never wrong. That's the way they brought me up. So that's
a very good point. That's a very good. Yes, Larkin.
Well, Curtis has said so many bright things, but and I keep on taking notes, and I have to go back 4 notes. And I thank Curtis for being on. I truly do. But I'm going to say this. If we're going to correct that drift that you talk about that's happening in education, there's only one way to stop it. Only one way. And I have told this to my daughter until I'm blue in the face. You can only blame yourself for every Board of Education meeting that you miss. You have an obligation with children in a school system to go in and make sure that they're doing what you consider to be the right thing. And if you don't, it's worse than, I don't care what George Carlin says, it's worse than not voting. And, you know, and shame on any parent that has 1, 2, 10, it doesn't make any difference. Children in the system who doesn't go out of their way to find out who's running for Board of Education, but endorsing and voting for specific educators that have the right ideas, and attending every one of those meetings to get your voice said as to curriculum, as to teacher pay and compensation. There are a myriad different aspects that, and issues that the board faces every day that if you don't play a part in, shame on you.
And you're right, Larkin, you're 1,000% right. And you know what? If people were attending the meetings and speaking up, our children would be directed to math and science, the trades, technology programs, and they would be all ready to go to be part of the businesses that are out there trying to rebuild America's industries. But that was not the deal. They sat quietly while the administrators of the school district spoke, and much of the time was wasted on this race baiting and stuff like that. I think the news media has caused more difficulty in race relations than anybody. They have helped people to look negatively about race. I work with everyone. It's a disgrace. I mean, every one of the people I know, I consider them a creation of God. Whether you're black, white, Asian, I want to work with you as long as you have something positive to offer. And that's why I say don't be afraid to go to those meetings and speak up. This is the time. They're making decisions. If it can't be accomplished by 2019, it should be accomplished by 2020. And one more point, and I'm sure, and I'd like to hear from anybody who'd like to go against this. When President Trump was elected, there were all parts, the House and Senate, were all in Republican hands. Why didn't they address the education issue? Why didn't they address the wall issue? You know why? Because the news media was only focused on this ridiculous investigation, all this witch hunting and everything else. And now that the thing might be coming to an end and they may not find anything that was so unbelievable, they're looking for other ways to cause torture.
Exactly, Mike. I was mad at the media last week for disrespecting our president so much. It was disgusting. I said, I just got to shut it off. Last night, turning it on and seeing the floodgates released on all these new investigations. Again, my parents, 82, 81. People are disgusted. I'm telling you, after last night, all these new investigations. Is that what we're going to see? Where the president that's making a difference, all they're doing is causing loss of confidence in our country that's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, if we want to, you're right, Mark.
It would make a little bit more sense if Trump wasn't doing a good job.
Yes, Mark, I'm living in a busy environment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I mean,
I cannot get it.
Is he the perfect president? No, but I mean, he's got a laundry list of successes that he's enjoyed.
Exactly.
Not one on the news.
And, you know, President Obama, President Bush, President Clinton all had the same opportunities to make the type of changes. They could have cut down the regulations on the businesses. They could have cut down the business taxes. Rich Loges has been saying for years, bring the money back home. Why didn't they do it all those years?
But here's the thing. And this is what's remarkable about Americans' abilities to democratically and legislatively influence the outcome. You're right about all the woulda, coulda, shouldas. You're absolutely right about that. But this is precisely why. This is precisely why, Michael, amongst other reasons, why we had the most glass ceiling shattering win in the history of American elections. It is not the Democrats who own glass ceiling shattering. It is all of us. We do, because Curtis, all of us got the first civilian president ever elected.
Way more
glass ceiling shattering than a win based on gender and race. Your race and gender aren't skills and achievements. They're not accomplishments. They're not. I'm not saying that they didn't deserve to win. They won democratically within the Electoral College. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not defying the will of the people. But Michael, 2016 was a decade in the making. It was supposed to be the empress's turn. Did you guys see Clinton yesterday said, I'm not running for president, but I'm not going to go away either. I'm going to do a segment on my show this week. It's my 100th podcast, Michael, and I think I'm going to do a segment entitled, Who Wore Crazy Better, Ted Bundy or Hillary Clinton? I got it ready to go. And you might be surprised by
Rich,
the answer.
I have the pleasure of working in the state of Pennsylvania with many wonderful Democrats and many wonderful Republicans. Each of them work with me because I'm presenting something positive, nothing negative. If I was saying, let's rip this one and let's rip that one, I wouldn't get any kind of attention from any of them. But that's not the way it is. Why isn't my type of attitude fostered in Washington, D.C.? Why are we paying attention to all these people that are just saying these things to get publicity? That's all they're doing. It. They don't really care. I mean, if these people wanted to be so, you know, change everything in America, lead by example. Let's see how good you walk down the street from your house to the Capitol. Let's show us how it's going to be done. How are this woman from Hawaii, how are they going to get over to Hawaii from California? Paddle boat? She's saying she's going to vote for this Green Deal. I mean, let's be real about these things. Let's push these people aside and start focusing on the things that really matter to our
nobody, youth. Michael, no one who says this nonsense believes it.
No, it's absolutely.
What their voters believe.
I want that senator from Hawaii to show us how she's going to paddle boat from Hawaii to Washington.
That's exactly what I
want her to do.
Right. She's going to get in a parasail, and she's going to parasail from California to Hawaii, and millions of Americans will say, yeah, I'm going to vote for that.
John Kerry is going to teach them how to do it.
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's all ridiculous. It's all absurd. But to Larkin's point, as silly and absurd and ridiculous as it is real, though. It's real.
You know, I'm beginning to think we're the most normal broadcast on the radio in the USA. We say a lot of wild things. And Curtis, thank you for being here. Mark, thank you so much for taking your time. And Rich and Larkin and Henry, thank you so much for helping us produce a program directed to trying to get things back to normal in America. We're not talking about ourselves only. We're talking about our children and our grandchildren. With that in mind, kindly call your school principal, kindly call your school superintendent, get their name and address, and ask them to send you a reply in writing about your concerns. Until this Saturday at 11, or next Wednesday at 11, I wish you and yours the very best. Have a great one.
Have a great weekend.
Henry, have Foles give me a call. I can find him a really nice house.
Thank you, guys.